talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now for the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We addressed it earlier on the season, right? The ship very quickly. So we know the recipe to get back to where we need to. Just, it's a starting point. It's an ugly starting point. And thank the boys. We have a fantastic team here.
Jake Odorizzi after
be a fantastic
yesterday's
teammate.
Start.
Jag bag.
What did he do that wasn't a fantastic teammate?
Where do I start? Last year when he didn't want to go to the bullpen and said he was never a relief pitcher and doesn't want to be one. And then, you know, bitched and moaned about every time he had to warm up or come back too soon or do all those things. Or the interview with Berman where he basically let everybody, I'm healthy, ask them. I don't know. I don't know when I'm going to play. So then he Bogarts his way into a rotation that's been kicking ass and taking names and mowing people down like a freaking lawn boy. And the next thing you know, he freaking implodes and puts you behind the eight ball where you think, well, that's great. After the role they've been on, just leave it to Jake to screw the whole thing up. And then thankfully they even found a way to survive that. Come on, man.
That was a good answer.
Welcome.
Odorizzi there saying that, you know, this was basically, he has shown this year that he's been able to bounce back. And he did show that. His first three starts this year were atrocious. I was calling for him to torture him in a baseball sense so he wouldn't pick up that player option for next year that can range from anywhere to $6.5 to $12.5 million, depending on incentives, if he hits them or not. But he did pitch really well after those three starts. He had a stretch of four straight starts where he didn't give up more than one earned run in each of those. One run, one hit, six innings. No runs, six and two-thirds. No runs, one hit over five. One run, one earned run, over five innings before he left the game in Boston. And then yesterday was his first start at a major league level in about 6 weeks since he left Fenway Park on May 16th. So the fact that he has bounced back once already this season, don't you think that there should be a runway for Odorizzi to try to find his way again in Major League Baseball?
No. You know why? Because your damn rotation has been on fire. It's been one of the best statistical and just eye test rotations of the last couple of years in Major League Baseball. When you look at how effective they've been, and they have been all, from a consistency standpoint all season long, but especially recently. With the way they've been playing recently, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Stop tweaking something that doesn't need to be tweaked. Leave it all alone. And I get that you had your chance, but guess what? You got hurt. They thought, a lot of people thought, and the way we saw it, it looked like it might be season ending. It wasn't. That's great for you. But guess what? Now, in the meantime, while you were trying to get back to the major league level, your major league starting rotation has taken it to another level. Mm-hmm. So therefore, be a good teammate, wait your turn, do what you need to do to stay ready and healthy, and then start contemplating your options. Do you want to accept a role where you can get moved to the bullpen? Are you just so adamant on being a starter that you can get a few more starts, or they can do some things for you in Sugarland, or they can look for you to be moved? But damn it, stop being bigger than the team, no matter how much you fluff them in a press conference after the game because you want to deflect from how crappy you looked. Be a good teammate.
He did own it after the game. He said how bad he was. He said, you're right, he did. I would argue that he is doing what is best for the team right now. And there's two things. One, I think that he does deserve a few starts. I think he does deserve three or four starts to see if he can bounce back like he did earlier this year. I mean, we were ready to DFA Jake Odorizzi. People were ready to DFA Jake Odorizzi today, if we're being completely honest. I think the fact that we saw the bounce back, and we saw the bounce back to over four starts, so that's sustained success, that he's earned the right to see if he can bounce back again. The second part to where I think he's currently being a good teammate is I believe that the roster needs this. The Astros are going to the six-man rotation, so he's not taking anybody's spot. Like, you're not bumping Javier or Keady to the bullpen. Those guys are still going to make their starts. They're still going to pitch once every 6 days. So I'm good with that. I want to preserve Justin Verlander for the playoffs, mm-hmm. and he's going to start on Thursday. I don't want Luis Garcia to flirt with 200 innings, or Javier, or Fromber. And because you have such a big divisional lead, I like a six-man rotation in the middle of the summer.
But to counter that, you got Justin Verlander.
Sure.
And you know, Verlander's hell-bent, and even this was almost like you had to hyper-convince him to take a couple of extra days, because he even said himself, and Todd DeShow put the quote out there that when they asked him about being bumped a couple of days, that he was forced to look at it from a big picture perspective to see that this is better off in the long term for him because of the fact that he has been eating up a lot of innings,
yeah,
doing what he's been doing so far. And as much as we know he's chasing stats, he's chasing strikeouts, he's chasing victories, he wants all those historic numbers on top of being a part of a winning team. He's got all of those, he's got the best of all three worlds right now, but the problem being is that at any time, if you push him too far now, you lose him for what he needs to be in the playoffs. So I get all those things. If he's okay with it, then there's a better chance that, yes, you can work Oda Rizzi in, go back to a six-man rotation, everybody's happy. But if not, I don't care if Jake Oda Rizzi isn't happy, because I'm really happy with the rest of the guys and the way they've been performing as starting pitchers.
And you can make a case that an unhappy Jake Oda Rizzi is actually better for you long-term, because I just mentioned the player option. Yep. And the fact that he makes $6.5 million base next year with a $2 million escalator, I think, for 20 starts, 25 starts, 30 starts. So every time he hits one of those milestones, he gets $2 million more. So that's something that you have to consider, too, with the payroll. And, you know, the Astros are going to be looking maybe for a first baseman, maybe for a reliever. So you don't want to pay Oda Rizzi next year.
Well, the only other bonus I can say is, too, is if he can finally find it again like he did once before.
Yep.
And you're right. The bigger key in all of this that you brought up that I was going to bring up is the fact that with such a big pad in the division, you have the luxury of being able to do what a lot of teams wouldn't even consider doing if their starters were pitching as well as the Astros starters, because they couldn't afford a misstep on multiple starts like the Astros can. But from an Astros perspective, what you really hope for is he does find it again for one or two starts, so he has some trade value. Remember, we said you couldn't do anything but DFA him when he was as bad as he was early in the year,
uh-huh.
And then he found it. And then until he got hurt, he was building up his value across the league. People were taking notice, not just Astros fans, but multiple teams across the league were saying, oh, maybe the Astros with a surplus of starters don't have a place for Oda Rizzi to go. Maybe we can kind of get in on that, and then he got hurt. If he can find that again, it could be the best of both worlds. Get him where he needs to go so he can be a starter. Get him out of your hair so he stops being a pain in the ass.
See, I'm very frustrated with Oda Rizzi yesterday, right? I mean, he's ruined the 4th of July.
And I didn't
tweet
about
it. It was very un-American of Jake Oda Rizzi to do that. But even if Jake Oda Rizzi gives you what he gave you yesterday, which was frankly not much, it was very bad, 5 runs over 4 innings, I'm going to take that. And I think that Jake Oda Rizzi is giving you overall value in the long run than if he wasn't pitching. Because I am a firm believer with where this rotation is at and because of the standings that this team should have a 6-man rotation. And Lance McCullers is not back yet. We don't know when he's going to come back. He's starting to throw a little more sliders and curveballs, which is great. I think that it's fair to say mid-August is still probably the most optimistic point of view of when McCullers could come back. And he's still going to need to like rehab assignments and be pitching like, you know, 3-4 innings to build his conditioning and his endurance. But if Oda Rizzi's pitching every 6 day, and he's, look, I'm with you. I don't want him to take anybody else's spot in the rotation. Like, he doesn't deserve to be getting starts over Urquidy. He doesn't deserve to be getting starts over Javier and anybody else. We all know that. Luis Garcia, no, absolutely not. Jake Oda Rizzi is the 6th starter on this team right now. If and when Lance McCullers comes back, Jake Oda Rizzi becomes the 7th best starter on this team. But I'm totally okay with a 6-man rotation. And if Jake Overeasy continues to pitch like yesterday and pitch poorly, I'm still okay with it. Because Jake Overeasy at that point, he's not necessarily winning games of when he goes out there every 6th game. What he's really doing and what his value comes into play is that Justin Verlander is not going to throw 200 innings. Framber Valdez is not going to throw 200 innings. You don't want to burn out Javier. You don't want to burn out Urquidy. You don't want to burn out Luis Garcia as well. So even if Oda Rizzi's pitching as poorly as he did yesterday, he's saving the rest of the arms, and that's an overall good thing for the Astros because of where they are in the American League West.
I hear all that, but I also think, just like we've talked about with other local teams, and clearing up your locker room situation, as much as he might be a guy that behind the scenes the players like and feel like is a good dude, I don't think Dusty feels that way. I think Dusty feels extremely guarded with everything that he says about this guy, because everything is being analyzed in Jake's locker, and he is thinking about all 100% Jake all the time. As much as he gave credits to his teammates, we wouldn't have been in the predicament we were in yesterday if he could have just shut his mouth, bided his time, and been a good teammate until the team said it's time for you to get back in there, or we need you to pick up some slack because we are trying to get some extra space for our starting pitching to get some rest. But instead, because he forced the issue and pushed the envelope, I had no sympathy for the guy. If you're going to be the kind of guy that you showed to be in the interview with Berman and leading up to this and looking like, and if by all the things we've heard and what's been said, was a guy that was adamant about getting back out there, then when you get back out there, you damn well better be pushing. And instead, you got pushed around. You gave up a boatload of hits and a five spot of runs in less than 4 innings, finally finished the 4th, but no one had any confidence in you. So when you walked off the mound, that's what you put in your back pocket to say, that's why I should be back out there? I'm not feeling any of that, and I have no sympathy for the guy.
No, I see where you're coming from there. I am interested to see if he can bounce back, for one. And I do very much like the idea of the six-man rotation with the idea of October in mind. So where even if he's getting lit up, he's saving the other guys.
JV scares me. That's the only thing. That I understand we're both on the same page on that. But the fly in the ointment is going to be if Verlander says, no, miss me with that life. I'll take it for one or two times around the rotation.
But even then, you can have a hybrid. I mean, even then, you can have a hybrid six-man.
You could.
So, like, Luis Garcia's pitching once a week, which, I mean, isn't necessarily
the hybrid is going to be when JV says, bump all the other guys, I'm good.
Yeah, it's Justin Verlander deciding when the hybrid is. Not Santa saying, you're just going to let Brendan Riley off the hook for letting Odorizzi down yesterday. It's a great point by Not Santa. Anytime we play Dito, Jake Odorizzi
is
Jake Odorizzi.
Only two runs in. I was like, Brendan, wherever you are, somewhere, someplace, make it happen. Play the damn song.
Hold on. How do you know I wasn't playing it on repeat my entire flight yesterday?
You would have told us.
Because no one else would have heard it.
You'd have told
interrupt
us by now.
National programming on the whatever was playing.
It's the first time it came up.
Play one damn little sound clip so we can write this guy's ship before he freaking sinks.
What is that? His what?
Ship.
Oh, okay. 713-780-ESPN. Are you okay with Odorizzi? Even if he pitched like he did yesterday as part of a six-man rotation, how do you think the Astros should handle Jake
Odorizzi?
Captain
of the bullshit.
713-780-3776. You got a lot more confidence than I do. I would have never tried that. Mm-hmm. All right, Jake Odorizzi, a lot of people weighing in on this. It's the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get to the Jake Odorizzi stuff in just a second. Somebody texted in, 713-780-ESPN. So we beg for text and calls. Do you guys want to see Yordan in the Home Run Derby?
I don't care. I think, you know what? I like it because of the fact that it's in L.A., where it's another way for the Astros to basically say, hey, stick it. You screwed this up royally. This guy could have been yours. Instead, he's ours.
Oh, see, I didn't even think about it from a trade perspective.
Yeah.
But how about the cheating scandal perspective, too, where they hate Astros? I had a friend ask me that today. I was like, he asked me, are you one of those blue checkmark guys that wants Yordan in the Home Run Derby? It's like, frankly, I couldn't care less. Like, if he's in it, that's great. It'll give me more reason to watch.
He said he's still deciding. Like, yeah. I guess it's quite a dilemma for him.
But if he said no, whatever. I don't care.
I'm fine either way. Yeah. But I think the overall kind of irony that would be involved.
There is, yeah, the storylines
are there.
Because
then if the Dodger fans start crapping on him, be like, but yeah, but if you guys would have played your cards right and kept him, you'd be cheering for his ass every single day.
The storyline part of it makes it interesting.
Yep.
But as far as him actually participating in it from like an Astros point of view, couldn't care less. The only
and I'm
home
not
run
worried
record,
about his swing getting
I'm not
up.
Either. I think that's a myth. Only home run chase that I'm interested in is Yordan's chase for Jeff Bagwell. On pace for 49.
Trying to get 50.
Yeah, well, 50.
I know.
Bagwell's 47 club record. 5516, is Seth Martinez taking over Javier's role in the bullpen? I think so, yeah.
Sure looks that way. He did a hell of a job for him yesterday.
Tip of the cap to Seth Martinez. I don't think we said it enough in our opening segment, but he kept the Astros in that game, ultimately won. He comes in there, gives up three runs, and then it's 8-1. Good game. See you later.
But you looked at me crazy when I thought this guy could
end up.
Yeah, well, but it's understandable if he did because it's hard to get into Dusty's circle of trust, too, right?
Well, he's the long guy. He's the long guy right now.
But he's proven, both long and short, he could pitch on the major league level and get major league hitters out. The only blip on the radar was in Yankee Stadium against Aaron Judge. Mm. So it wasn't against the guy, and it wasn't his doing that they said pitch to him.
Yeah.
They could have said walk him.
Should've.
But because he gave it a shot, and he ended up getting an earned run in the process by giving up a home run. But overall, he's proven whenever he's put into the game, there's a pretty damn good chance he's getting out of whatever he's been put into.
And usually it's a long relief roll where, you know, give me two innings, keep me in a five-run game, and I think he's done a pretty good job of that. His numbers, I mean, really good job of that. His numbers in the bigs are better than his Sugarland numbers, which is maybe he's a gamer, right? Maybe he's a gamer. All right, so back to Jake Overeasy, 7223, which, but did we start the Overeasy thing in Houston? I've seen people tweeting Overeasy left and right.
No, I think we did.
I've seen it in the betting community, and I've seen it in the daily fantasy sports community because, you know, Jake Overeasy is on the mound. It's an easy over, but I'm not sure people brought that to Houston until we
coined it in terms of taking a gambling term and making it fit for a pitcher that
I think we brought it to the city.
Without question.
And Twitter is like, they've taken over that name. They call Jake Over Easy more than they call him Over Easy. I think we started that, at least in the city. 7223, if this was McCullers, we give him another chance. But Jake, nah, we know who he is and don't have enough time in the organization to have that much say-so. He doesn't have that much time in the organization. Look, I don't care if Jake Odorizzi is getting rocked for 5 runs and 4 innings in every single one of his starts. But if you're saving the arm of Verlander, you're saving the arm of Fromber, Javier, Garcia, and Urquidy, I'll take it. I'll gladly give him the paycheck if he's saving the arm of those guys.
I'm more likely to give the benefit of the doubt. Some guy, whether it's McCullers or a lesser name, that's become more of a teammate, you know, more of a team player.
Yeah.
The fact that it has been all about him in almost every aspect of his existence with the Astros, and not he's been the Carmelo Anthony of not accepting, sure, you know, a secondary role. Look, it's one thing to say Carmelo Anthony, a future Hall of Famer, doesn't want to be a sixth man or come off the bench. It's another thing to say Jake Odorizzi gets to put his foot down and say, I'm not a relief pitcher.
Yeah, see, I'm with you on that. I'm with you with, like, the saltiness, like, just end all of that. But if you want to be a pinata every 6 day and save the arms of the other guys, get me on board with that.
But you know how I feel about it. I get in a bad mood when they lose. I don't like them losing. And so if I know that every 6 day there's a chance, there's a better chance that they're going to lose than win because of this clown.
They won yesterday.
I don't like it. Well, they won. Great. But should they have? It's not going to happen every time when you spot a team a five spot in 4 innings.
Joel started the game of the winning team.
Joel is literally explaining the reasoning behind the Odorizzi song to begin with. Like, the reason I came up with that song is because this is how Jake Odorizzi used to make me feel.
Yeah, this was when Brendan...
It sucks the life out of your baseball excitement and joy every time he pitches.
I think this was our first song, was it?
It was.
This was our first Astro starter song. Oh, yeah, Luis Garcia, which carried over from last year, yeah. By Elias de Cumbia. Jake, this song was born after Jake Odorizzi's first 3 starts, in which he had an ERA of 9. He had a 9 ERA. We were trying to make his life miserable so that he wouldn't pick up his team option for next year. So we gave him this song because it's depressing to watch Jake Odorizzi
pitch. He soiled
the
bed so much he made a manure factory. So we had to do something to either resurrect what was left of his career or send him off to pasture. And thankfully, thanks to the song,
he was really good his next 4 starts.
He got really good for a couple of games. And then he looked like he had a catastrophic injury that I guess... I'm still debating whether that was a good thing or not, that he survived it and came back.
Ankle sprains can be very serious. Ankle sprains are
was
a very serious injury.
Was it an ankle sprain or was it a calf pull?
Whatever. He got carted off. It was very significant.
Either way, Jeremy, I feel very confident saying there was discomfort.
There was a lot of discomfort.
I just feel like there was discomfort involved.
His next 4 starts after we gave him the Dido, though.
Dido,
don't caro. Sub-1 ERA.
Bankero? Oh, he didn't know.
Sub-1 ERA in those next 4 starts. You know, Jake Odorizzi's got an above 500 record. He's 3-2 on these.
I think that should be the first line in any trade proposal you make to another team.
Try to sell Jake Odorizzi to somebody else. Somebody texted me at Nacho G, which I've been looking at Jake Odorizzi's contract details for next year that I overlooked this for this year. He says, my guess why Odorizzi's agitated is because his incentives for 2022 are primarily based on innings pitched and probably thinks the organization may be holding him back from hitting those bonuses. He gets $500,000 if he hits 100 innings, and then he gets $1 million each for every 10 innings after that. So if he hits 100 innings this year, where's he at this year? Let's see. He's at 35.2. 100 innings might be tough, actually, after he missed those games. So if he gets to 100 innings, he gets paid $500,000. And then for every 10 innings after that, just 10 innings, he gets $1 million on top of it.
I'm going to make sure, man, if I'm Dusty Baker, I get him to 99 innings, and then I sit his ass down.
Man, that's cruel.
He annoys the hell out of me.
Dusty wouldn't do that.
No, Dusty would, but wouldn't.
Jim
but
Crane
I would.
Might like him, too.
Yeah, I would. Hell yeah.
Jim Crane might like him, too.
I owe you nothing.
$500,000 if he hits 100 innings, and then $1 million for 110, another $1 million for 120, another one for 130, 140, 150. You know, if he wins the Cy Young, he gets $100,000.
Well, I don't have to worry about that one.
You get 100K. World Series MVP, $75,000.
Don't have to worry about that one either.
Yeah. So that's a good call, though, by that tweet. I think that does have something to do with Jake Overeasy's frustration with the organization. He probably thought he could have been back sooner. You know what else? He started 2 games in Sugarland. He started 2 games in Sugarland. That's
pitching
not going
to
count.
For the Nationals, I can understand his beef.
Well,
I mean, if you like being a part of a winning team that has a chance to get you a World Series title, and you understand that the guys pitching in front of you are pitching their ass off, guess what? Get in line and wait your turn.
You wouldn't be mad if they were holding you back from 100 innings and $1 million?
I'd be mad if I was trying to get that money, and I could make a case for trying to get that money, but at least I'd be honest that I'm just really trying to get that money instead of trying to basically sit a guy down that's been pitching his tail off while I've been out nursing an injury. Come on, man.
I would be aiming to get 100 innings and $1 million.
Of course you would, and I could trade you to a place where you can get it easily. If you want that, speak now or forever hold your peace. Because if want that, I'll do my best job to facilitate that.
He might demand a trade.
Then good. Get his ass out of here. Addition by subtraction yet again.
8693 says, I heard the Wheelhouse also say they can't trade Odorizzi. I'm still trying to figure out why that's not possible because of his contract. I'm genuinely confused. You can trade Jake Odorizzi.
Yeah, contractually, I don't know how that plays
He doesn't
in.
Have a no-trade clause. He doesn't have 10-5 rights where he can veto a trade.
Right now, he doesn't have value. That's the biggest problem.
And that might be where the Wheelhouse was coming from. Was that right now? Because I imagine that they said this last week, so he still hadn't pitched in a big league game. But that's where trading Odorizzi is not easy, right? Like, he's on the books for a significant amount of money the rest of this season. He has a player option for next year that makes a minimum of 6.5 and a maximum of 12.5. So now you say, okay, well, is Jake Odorizzi worth that? So I think that's where the Wheelhouse was coming from, is that he is difficult to trade because of his contract, the amount of money that he's going to make. Now, if Jake Odorizzi can get back and show, you know, signs of being able to pitch like he pitched in games 4 through 7 this season for him, I think that he could be attractive for some teams to trade, you know, not even a very good prospect, or just basically you trade him for nothing to get his contract off the books. I think it's difficult to trade Odorizzi because of his value. You can trade Jake Odorizzi, though. I think it's going to be difficult to do. I'm not sure the realistic chances of that. Like, people are texting in, trade him, release him, trade him now before the deadline, see what you can get. Jake Odorizzi, we got to trade him for someone for the bullpen. Like, here's another, like, a challenge of trading Jake Odorizzi is that if you're trying to, like, bring in a piece that's going to help you in the postseason, that team's probably not going to be willing to trade one of those pieces to you because they're in the playoff race. Why would they trade a lefty reliever out of their bullpen when they're in the playoff race for Jake Odorizzi? So now you have to be kind of, you know, now you're looking at trading a player to a contender that needs pitching and getting a prospect in return. So don't expect to get, like, anything significant for the big league team, significant period, for Jake Odorizzi, even if you trade him. If you trade him, you're clear on the contract, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's not an Abraham Toro type deal, right? It's not a younger guy that's going to be deprived of an opportunity to play a spot that he plays, and doing him a solid gets you a major league player in return. It's totally different because Jake's well past his prime. He has a contract with a lot of money involved in it. And he's also proved to be less than stellar as a teammate.
Yes, and he wants that money. 713-780-ESPN. You brought up Justin Verlander. The fact that he's moving to Thursday in the rotation. What is going on with this? It's very interesting that he goes, pitch me every fifth day, to where now he's pitching on 7 days rest. Let's try to get to the bottom of that when we return. And the thinking of Justin Verlander pitching on 7 days rest, it's making me drink because I can't figure it out. And whenever I do drink, it's generally been vodka, gin, or bourbon. They're all part of the rotation for me. And a local Texas brand, you know them by now, Gentle Bend Spirits does it all, and they do it better than anyone else. I hope you swung on by to the Total Wine in Pearland the other day and said hello to Ricky Ford, founder, owner of Gentle Bend Spirits, A&M class of 85, by the way. But his Gentle Bend is a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits, and they use their state-of-the-art, innovative, Presedo craft technology that's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and most importantly, it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. They are unrivaled. Look, I know you have your favorite brand. You have your go-to, your Old Faithful, but trust me now and thank me later. Make the switch. Take the challenge that I did. Try a sip of Gentle Bend and compare it to your brand. You're going to taste the huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, A&M class of 85, had me out to his tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought. Ever since then, I've been a Gentle Bend man. You can find Gentle Bend Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs. You can also get it online at gentlebend.com. Also, if you're looking for that bourbon, head to the tasting room in Alvin. Give that bourbon a shot. It is fantastic. 94 proof. It was the winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year, and it's exclusive only to that tasting room in Alvin. So swing on by, have some, say the Killer Bee sent you. Also, we'll be doing a live remote at that tasting room in Alvin on July 14th. So circle the calendar, take off work, come have some bourbon with me. July 14th, the tasting room in Alvin, live remote. Gentle Bend, the union of tradition and invention.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Could Odorizzi be the next Fires and spill the Astros' secrets if he gets cut or traded? You mean the secrets that all of Major League Baseball is doing? What's he going to do? Reveal that the baseball players in the mid-90s were doing steroids? Maybe. Maybe Jake Odorizzi will do that. Maybe he'll tell everybody that everybody's sign-stealing in baseball. 713-780-ESPN. So we knew with Odorizzi coming back that he was probably going to get a start. And I said that he made two starts with Sugarland instead of saying one start with Sugarland and one start with Corpus Christi. I want to make sure I'm very clear on that because it's very important to the point of where I feel like Jake Odorizzi was upset that he's not starting those games in Major League Baseball because it's going to mess with his innings pitched. All right, so they slotted in Odorizzi yesterday, right? So if you're going with the six-man rotation, that's great. Like Justin Verlander's doing the one thing that we want him to do, right? We don't want him to pitch every fifth day. We admire his greatness. We hope that he wins Cy Young's. We hope that he gets to 300 wins, 4,000 strikeouts, all of that. But we've been saying for a long time is what it means for the Houston Astros in 2022 is that it's better if Justin Verlander throws 150 innings as opposed to 180. You don't want him to crap out for the playoffs.
Look, as much as we thought that he was invincible, that his arm was invincible, that he could do things that most human pitchers could not do, Father Time and a lot of wear and tear caught up with him. And he had Tommy John surgery. And so the last thing you can afford, and it doesn't take, you know, a whole lot of history to figure out when you go back to last season, that when you got a guy that you're starting to rely on as your ace, or even more importantly, has been your ace all year, but because of the wear and tear of a season, he suddenly either isn't the same or isn't able to pitch. What a difference it can make, and it could be the difference between winning the World Series or losing the World Series. You want to caution on the side of let's pull back a little bit now. Let's pad the brakes a little bit now so that he can go full tilt in the playoffs when we need him the most.
So we're all in agreement that this is a good thing for Justin Verlander's long-term growth. I think
JV's the only one that's not.
But he's also, like, he wasn't anti this move, right? Like, from what we hear, like, this was okay. Like, I don't think they forced Verlander. You sold it to him. You had to convince him to do it. I firmly believe that because he's a competitor and wants to go out there fifth day.
And he's chasing numbers.
And he's chasing numbers. Absolutely. Absolutely. But if that's part of what makes him great, hey, go chase numbers, right? Like, if that's what makes you Justin Verlander is that you're seeking the numbers of 300 wins, 4,000 strikeouts, starting the All-Star game. If that's what makes Justin Verlander tick, who am I to tell you not to do that? You know what I mean? You don't want to take the dog out of him.
Well, again, and you're kind of at his mercy too, right? Because you want him you want him to come back. You want him to feel like he likes the way things are handled and decisions are made in the organization. So you have to handle him differently with more kid gloves than you do some of the other guys on the roster. But you also realize he backs up his end of the deal so much so that he gets a little extra leeway like we've seen. But with that, you hear the quotes and you hear him say, hey, look, I was forced to kind of look at the bigger picture so that I could understand the thought process and why this was the right move to make. It didn't sound like he was overzealous about doing it, but at the same time, it also, when you start piecing it together, looks like, though it's probably two separate discussions, but it looks like Odorizzi forcing his hand to get in and wedge his way into a rotation he has no business being a part of right now.
Right, but I mean, if you want to go six-man, you really don't have a choice.
Right.
So. But if you do, like Odorizzi gets the start yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Starts on Monday. Justin Verlander could have went yesterday. Would have been his fifth day. So you would think, okay, well, if Verlander's not pitching on the fifth day, he's just going to start Tuesday against Zach Greinke in Kansas City. This is what I can't understand, and maybe anybody can help me here, you or the listener, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If Verlander could have went yesterday, would have been the fifth day, would have been his normal start, why isn't he going today? And on top of that, why are the Astros jumping Luis Garcia and Christian Javier to go ahead of Justin Verlander? So not only is Verlander not going on his normal day, but he's not going today. He's not going tomorrow. He's going on Thursday. He's getting a seven-day rest before he pitches again. And I'm having a very difficult time. I just told you, it's led me to drinking a bunch of Gentle Ben, which isn't a bad thing. Why? Why are we waiting 7 days for Justin Verlander?
I can only speculate. I think that in part you're heading towards the All-Star break where you can reset the deck and do it however way you want to do it. But, you know, you also have younger arms that, you know, they feel are more capable of being able to go whenever they're asked to go. But you're talking about a guy that they've handled with kid gloves too in the past in Luis Garcia and the amount of innings that he's pitched. So, you know, you're looking at it and trying to balance all of the different things, but the one thing you're going to prioritize is your ace. And so you're going to prioritize him and say, is one day going to make that big of a difference? And maybe that was an argument that JV made. You're only going to have me sit for one day. What difference is that going to make? But if you can get him an extra 2 days rest and you're heading towards the All-Star break where...
And it's not going to cost you a game.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my line of thinking originally. And I started counting out the days. And it's like, okay, well, he's pitching Thursday, which is a day game. He's pitched pretty good on days, the day game. So maybe he wants the day game. But then you start spacing out the rest of the games before the All-Star break. And that's the only day game he would pitch. The rest of them will be night games. So then I started to space it out, too. Like, if he's pitching on Thursday against Kansas City, okay, he makes that start. And then if you look at six games after that, which would be his sixth turn in the rotation, you're looking at Thursday against the Angels in Anaheim. And then if you space it out after that, he would be on normal rest for the All-Star game.
I think that's part. I was going to say that's a factor as well, is the fact that they pretty much know he is going to be a part of the All-Star game and not just as a spectator that's getting his accolades.
Might start it.
Yeah, he's probably going to start the All-Star game. So probably involved in the thought process is how do we get him to do what Major League Baseball wants him to do and not screw up what we need him to do for us.
See, this is what's fascinating, right? Like, if Jake Odorizzi did this, if Jake Odorizzi's like, you know what, I want to... Well, he wouldn't because he wouldn't be in the All-Star game. But he's like, I want to start Thursday because I want to space out my workload to where I'm participating in the All-Star game. So Justin Verlander's getting two extra days off. He's pitching on 7 days rest whenever he pitches against Kansas City on Thursday. So he can space it out to where he would be eligible to start the All-Star game. Are you okay with that?
Well, because of where the team sits in the division, yeah.
See, this
it goes back to our other discussion with why you're willing to have a longer leash with a Jake Odorizzi. Well, it's because the division is basically in your back pocket. You have nothing to worry about there. So you can take some chances other teams can't afford to take because they're in the middle of a pennant race and trying to make sure that they have solidified a playoff spot. And I think that as part of it, we just got done saying and highlighting yet again how Verlander is a number chaser. And that's not a negative term. He's just a historian of the game that wants to put his name in there with some of the best pitchers to ever have pitched. And he knows in order to do that, he would love to achieve 4,000 strikeouts and 300 wins. And we talked about the fact that for about 4 to 5 more years, he's going to have to pitch. But on top of that, he's also going to look at things like how many All-Star games did I start? How many All-Star appearances did I have? And they're going to be meaningful.
I agree with all of that. I think that's why Justin Verlander is going on the 7 days rest on Thursday so he can align himself to pitch in the All-Star game. It's just fascinating when having this conversation because are you okay with Justin Verlander making decisions? And look, I think that the team was involved here too. But are you okay with Justin Verlander having the All-Star game on his mind when you're mapping out this rotation? Like if it was a younger pitcher, if it was a 24, 25-year-old, you'd be like, wait a second. Should Christian Javier, should Luis Garcia, should they be dictating when they're going when they're throwing, you know, when they're starting games, and then also mapping out 2 weeks in advance that they would be on full rest to start the All-Star game? I think we would have a problem with it.
Well, like we said, you're as an organization and the owner, it starts with the owner. You're at the mercy of JV, and so you're going to do what JV wants to do in a lot of ways. But if JV says to you, hey, part of the things that are important to me this season, I have a ton of team goals and individual goals, but as an individual, I want to start another All-Star game.
No, and I see where I think it's okay with Verlander, where I wouldn't be okay with it with a younger pitcher. It's the same thing as Justin Verlander. You're, you know, morphing your hybrid six-man rotation around Justin Verlander. Is like, I don't love that Justin Verlander wants to go every fifth day, not every sixth day, because I want a six-man rotation. I don't love the fact that Justin Verlander is mapping out his schedule so he can be on full rest for the All-Star game when no one else would have the right to do that. That said, it's freaking Justin Verlander. Like, I don't like this, right. JV. I don't like the five-man. I don't like you pitching every fifth day. I don't like you mapping up when you can pitch in the All-Star game. I hate all of those things. But, Branham, it's Justin Verlander. Okay, fine. It's Justin Verlander. He can do whatever the heck he wants.
Are we also in agreement, though, for as much as we like the six-man rotation and we'd like to see it, there's also, at a certain point in the season, you've got to ramp it back up to five. Because you know in the playoffs, you may only go to four. So you still got to get those guys stretched out enough to realize that you're not going to have the liberty and luxury that you had by coasting in the division to rest that extra day. And you've got to get back into a regiment that gets you ready and your arm feeling ready every fifth day so that you can be where you need to be for the playoffs.
Last month of the year.
Yeah.
Last month of the year.
Like, but I think, still, we're in agreement. That has to happen.
Like, how many starts you think?
four.
I was thinking four or five. Yeah. So that's last month of the year. So if it's four or five, five-man rotation, you're looking at 20-25 games. So I'm with you there. And then if you look in September now, as we go way and far in front, they have three off days in September. So like, okay, like six-man rotation needs to be out the window once you get to September. And you have a couple of off days fixed in there as well. So you can go with that five-man. And like you said, they do need to get ramped back up four or five starts to be pitching on a fifth day. But right now, middle of the summer, the dog days with the division lead that you have, six-man rotation, even if it means Jake Odorizzi being Jake Overeasy. Always play the over. Jake Overeasy is on the mound. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You know who's back at Minute Maid Park tonight?
The Wheelhouse?
I hope Stinky Zach Greinke. We'll kick it around with the Wheelhouse next, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7, that's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, you know what that means? It means it's Luis Garcia Day at the ballpark. He's welcoming in Stinky Greinke, Zach Greinke, who's actually been very good for Kansas City. Cody Stute's hanging out with us as well. How are we going to view Zach Greinke, looking back at him as a Houston Astro?
Thanks for hanging out with us.
He's getting the video treatment, right? He's getting a video tribute?
Yeah, I think so.
He has to get a video tribute.
Why is it, though, that...
Do you think
AJ they mistreated him enough, and I know that on the way out, he wasn't fond of, like, the city of Houston, or he made some reference to the city of Houston.
That was never on, like, public record, though.
Right. But I'm saying overall, like, aside from AJ kind of screwing him in Game 7, when you think about it, he had a good run,
so
right?
I was going to ask you, do you think that him getting pulled by AJ Hinch is going to make the tribute video tonight?
No.
You don't think so? You don't think that makes the cut?
I don't think that's something that they want to
You don't think the video
revisit?
Editor, the intern, is going to put that on the highlights
that's
of
not
Zach
revisit,
Greinke?
Revisited history?
That's the one memory I will remember the most of Zach Greinke.
I want to, you know what the video I'll remember him the most? Him sitting with the cardboard cutouts in the stands amongst amongst the non-people during the COVID years.
I'll look back fondly at Zach Greinke. I liked his time in Houston. I like that he's quirky. I like that he's very weird, and I like that he owns it. What do you think, Cody?
I will always have a small piece of me that resents Zach Greinke because the cost of getting Zach Greinke was
a beer.
Seth Beer.
You got a beer. Who cares?
And I kind of wish that there was going to be a Beer Astros jersey one day. Yeah. Doesn't seem like there's going to be. And Seth Beer may not even actually be that good, it turns out. But, Greinke was solid. He was fine. I think anybody that signs up for the Zach Greinke experience knows that it's going to be unique compared to basically every other player that they're going to have in their locker room.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he was. He was a unique, different type of guy, and that's probably how he'll go down.
Did you see recently where the kid gave him the ball to sign and he took it and chucked it?
Yes, that was awesome.
That's not awesome.
I thought it was hilarious.
I hope he made up for that and got the kid a new ball and signed it or something.
I can't tell if Zach Greinke uses the I don't like people and it's like causes me anxiety and things like that. I can't tell if he uses that to just be a jerk.
I'll be honest with you. I'd love to add that to my repertoire. I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to be like, you know what? I'm socially awkward and just be jerks to everybody I run across.
Well, you're a jerk right now. You don't have to claim the social. How am I a jerk right now? You're like, mean to me all the time.
Altuve gets all the credit in the world, which he deserves for the fact that he sees a kid with a, hey, Altuve, it's my birthday sign, brings the kid down, takes a picture, signs a baseball.
I thought the kid was going to get an at-bat.
Yeah, the kid. Altuve does it all the right way. And look, I know that he's been diagnosed that Greinke has real issues and anxiety with the media and speaking in front of people and all those things. But then how come there are times when he speaks in front of the media just fine and everything's hunky-dory, and other times when he just kind of flips a switch and that's okay?
I'd be fascinated to know. Like, did you see the story over the weekend of Max Scherzer's rehab start at AA?
Yeah.
That he spent, like, all this money on the locker room, and he bought him, like, steak and lobster for the dinner, and he got him all AirPods. Yep. I'd be fascinated to know what a Zach Greinke minor league rehab start looks like.
You know what it looks like? It looks like Greinke calling the GM going, on second thought, I don't need a rehab stint. I'll be ready in a few days.
Yeah. Hey, does it look like Scherzer, or does it look like some of these awful stories that started popping up on the internet after that about, like, big leaguers who would order a pizza to their car wait till everyone was dressed, then get dressed and leave before the game was over, like some of those guys. Actually, I think, screw it, he's never listening. Eric Bedard was accused of doing that.
Eric Bedard?
Yeah, the once very brief Astro, Eric Bedard.
Which no one would be upset with you if you forgot that experience.
Usually it's the norm for a veteran to pick up the tab for dinner. Usually it's better than the little like ham sandwich that they have for
the
post-game.
Of the reason the guys get so excited to have a big leaguer come down to the minor league.
I wonder what Odorizzi did last week for the AAA.
I bet you he did all right. I bet you did okay
for
the guys.
Got a stick of deodorant and maybe a Slim Jim.
Yeah.
Here's some jerky and stay fresh.
Here's some Old Spice that's 4 years old. You guys pick whatever you want out of the cabinet.
We got deodorant from Odorizzi. Here's your Slim Jim. See ya.
They should have asked him that. I'd be curious to know what Odorizzi gave the guys. July 4th yesterday.
Bet it was something salty.
Yeah, probably. Our fireworks show is worth it, in your opinion, Stutes?
Depends what type of show you're going to go watch. In general, I would say yes for the majority of people that are like excited to go see fireworks. Pretty much any fireworks show is going to be worth it. I think it's about who you're watching the fireworks show with. Because if you're just like if me and a bunch of my friends who were all my age went and watched fireworks, we'd kind of be like, eh, cool.
So you're looking for some fireworks after the fireworks. If that's the case, then the fireworks are worth it.
Yeah, that'd be one way to say it. But like, I think, too, like...
If she lights your Roman candle after, you're good?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And hopefully I last longer than the fireworks.
Mm-hmm. And there's some sparks?
Right, sure. Mm-hmm. I would say, though, I forget every year how excited kids get for fireworks.
Yeah.
And so watching them get super excited about literally anything exploding always gets me a little bit more excited about the fireworks. So if you got some kids...
So
like,
the thought of anything exploding gets you excited?
When it comes to fireworks and the explosion of fireworks, I also got like way deep into like firework research and like how they create some of these yesterday after watching some of them like explode and what they do and this and that. And it's a very weird industry because it's primarily, I feel like,
run, I think it's amazing like how these pyrotechnic engineers can get the smiley faces and the hearts in the air. Once they explode, how do you know once everything explodes how it's going to fall?
Man, I got to assume there's some level of chemistry involved in that.
Sure.
I've literally never taken a chemistry class in my entire life. I avoided it like the plague.
High school did you go to?
Bel Air. You didn't have to take chemistry if you took physics.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so I've never – so I do not understand how fireworks work even after watching like how it's made on fireworks. But I'm fascinated that they can get them to do all these different things and know that it's this color and that.
Isn't that crazy?
It's wild.
And then if you saw the build-up to the Macy's show in New York, the pyrotechnic guys and the orchestra, the band and orchestra go out in the middle of the desert to do like dry run practices where the, you know, too bad you're not the neighbors in the desert and don't have a house there to get the whole $1 million show for free. But like, there's the people playing the music while the people are shooting off the fireworks to sync it all up so that they can do it in New York.
That's why. That's great. That's great. Have you guys ever... So I showed this to a bunch of people that I was watching the fireworks with yesterday that they had not seen this. Do you remember 10 years ago when San Diego exploded all their fireworks at once?
Mm-mm.
So the city of San Diego, just Google San Diego fireworks mishap. And the city of San Diego 10 years ago shot like all of their fireworks off at once on accident. And it just was like this giant, big, like, flare.
One big finale?
Yeah, it was just this giant, big flare, and that was it. And then everyone was kind of looking around like, that was it? And it's like, yeah, that was it. And, like, the city of San Diego, like, totally blew it.
These things aren't cheap either.
I'd like that more, I think.
Just the giant fireball in the sky.
Well, but if one they giant, all blow up like that, then you don't get the individual, like...
Yeah, but one giant explosion would be, like, cool to see once in your life. And you don't have to wait around for 25-30 minutes for the show.
I guarantee you... The people that were at the 2012 San Diego fireworks show will never forget the 2012 San Diego fireworks show.
Exactly.
I think when you become an adult, you start getting like more anti-fireworks show because of all that goes into the long wait to get there. Even if you have the quote-unquote entertainment they had in downtown Houston of has-beens and never-will-bes, you're still waiting in the scorching sun.
You're telling me that you weren't excited to see Sawyer Brown on stage?
I didn't know they were still a thing at all. I remember they once were.
Who's Sawyer Brown?
Didn't they once win like some TV contest and
they
had a
Star
little
Search.
Run?
That's okay, how they got off the ground. Yeah.
Well, or Clay Walker, who, if you're a Houstonian, you have to somehow work in Clay Walker no matter where he is and what he's been doing.
Never forgive that guy for singing the national anthem.
That stupid song they play.
I like the song.
Oh, of course
I
you
like
do.
The song.
You like the song?
I like the song.
Sucks.
I like Football Time in Houston. It's time for an update, but I don't mind football time.
You want a little remix, like a little Bun B in it?
I would do. I don't want a remix because I want a totally new song. So give me a totally new song going forward. But yeah, I don't mind football time in Houston.
Oh my God, you're one of the few.
That's not surprising in the least, though.
No, it's not.
It's not surprising.
That's right.
I don't hate it. I'm kind of on the fence about it.
But on top of that, then I'm watching the live remotes from the reporters after the show. Uh-huh. When you realize it's one thing to just get back to your car fighting the crowd, then you're going to have to try and get out of downtown Houston, which is going to take you no less than an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, it's probably a lot more difficult to handle one of those yesterday when most people come to work on a Tuesday. Whereas, like, if that was Saturday and everybody had Sunday off, it's probably an easier sell for everybody that wants to get involved.
Dusty was listening to our show today. He's playing Yordan Alvarez in left field. Yordan Alvarez returned to the outfield is tonight.
Who's the shortstop? Pena. Be careful, Yordan.
It's pretty normal lineup with Brantley out, except Diaz is playing first base.
You think they've talked about
Yuli's DHing?
Is Jake in center?
Yeah.
You think that they've had a conversation with Jake about how to properly call off one guy and tell the other guy it's his ball?
He just needs to take charge as a center fielder. He couldn't get there,
so the next best thing is open your mouth.
He could have got there.
Yell.
He could have got there. What was your favorite moment over the weekend for the Astros?
Yordan walk-off?
Yeah. See, Pena over Tapera. Like, the fact that it was Tapera
throws it in the mix.
It'd be a little bit better if it was somebody from the 2017 team that went yard on Tapera and not a new guy.
But still, did you see how quick he spun around? Like, he got whiplash watching that thing get out. That was fantastic.
That's true. I also appreciated Scott Barlow, who was the Royals pitcher, that just looked like he looked so devastated that he had just – because it was – honestly, I didn't think it was that bad of a pitch.
No, but
– Yordan just muscled
Stanton said
sucker.
In the postgame show, but the tape on him shows he's been throwing the backdoor slider way too much, and everybody knows it's coming. And obviously, Yordan didn't miss it.
He sat on it. And that dude's so good.
Yeah, and I was watching the game yesterday. It was sort of out of hand at one point, and I was like, "This is one of the worst teams in baseball. This is one of the best teams in baseball." I was like, "They're gonna win."
I never thought that.
Then it was the Yordan. I think walk off to cap it off.
I think the first time I thought that they were gonna win is when they pulled it within two. When they pulled it within two, I was like, "Oh, they got a shot."
Right? Yeah, but otherwise, Jake All About Measy had me convinced that this was an L.
And then whenever Yuli tied it up with his stinger, I mean, he
that was a
crushed
laser.
158 exit velocity to tie the game yesterday. As soon as they tied it, I thought they were going
to
win.
By the way, I went to Mayor Turner's office. I want Ryan Tapera to get the golden plunger and not get a key to the city. He gets forced out of the city. He's not allowed to claim it anymore.
Jake Asman on the Wheelhouse and I argue frequently about if Tapera is a Houstonian or not. I said, no, he got revoked.
Well, you don't think the Woodlands is in Houston. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
Lots to talk about the Astros.
It sounds very good. Was Rocky there whenever you were at Bel Air?
Uh-huh.
Very good. I loved Rocky. All right, that does it for us. Thanks to Brennan for doing all hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.